Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
We bring in Fox analyst, former U.S. national team defender, Alexi Lalas. Did I get you hungry there, Alexi?
You did. It sounds good.
Oh, man. I'll tell you, some real Indian food next time you're in Houston is at King's Court. So first, I just want to say, have you kind of gotten back your footing after this incredible World Cup work and all that time you spent in Russia?
Yeah, it was an interesting summer, obviously, with the World Cup being in Russia. I had never been to Russia before, and so my whole context was based in growing up in the 70s and 80s and what Russia was, and, you know, through pop culture, you know, movies, war games, Red Dawn, Firefox, that type of stuff. And so to go and see, and I'm not going to say I saw Russia. I was in Moscow, obviously, at our set there, and to see it through that lens was really interesting. I felt everyone was on their best behavior, as is the case when you have a World Cup, because they recognize it's an advertisement to the world and they want to put on a good face. I understand that. But I am in no hurry to go back because underneath it, there was this bubbling, at least the sense that I got, there was this bubbling sense of lawlessness and danger. And I just felt like the last plane left and it returned to kind of a Wild West feel. But the people were wonderful. Food was great. Our organization in terms of putting the World Cup on. And, you know, look, I lived that incredible Groundhog day in and day out of walking to Red Square for that incredible set that we had for Fox and being able to talk about soccer. So I'm not complaining, but I did my time in Russia. I had a good time. And, you know, you got to kind of decompress after a World Cup. I've done so many of these, and this one's taken a little bit. I'm still a little bit fuzzy, but getting back into the swing of things on Fox with Bundesliga, MLS. We got the U.S. game this Friday in against Brazil in New Jersey. So lots of soccer, and I'm just real privileged to be able to be involved in calling all these games.
Yeah, that's a good one to keep an eye on this Friday with the young U.S. team. We'll get to that in a minute here. What's most on your soccer mind right now? What right away jumps into your mind?
Well, I think when it comes to, so there's a bunch of different topics. So you got, obviously, Cristiano, who's always going to be talked about, and what's happening with him over in Juventus and this new country and this new league. And he's always someone to follow. And it's always in the context of Messi. So there's Messi, too, and who's going to win the player of the year, and him being Messi being left off. So that's from a bigger picture standpoint. Obviously, more at home, we got MLS and, you know, continued amazing feats on and off the field from someone like Atlanta United. You got the great DC United story with Wayne Rooney. Are they going to make the playoffs? You obviously have the Columbus Crew situation on the field where things are going well, but off the field we know that this painful saga that may or may not be coming to an end of them moving to Austin. I mean, that's a huge story that everybody is and should be talking about, because it relates not just to MLS but to soccer in the United States. As you mentioned, the national team finally getting back together after the summer where we weren't there, and the continued dissection of why that happened and how the bigger picture of development in the U.S. So there's just so many things going on when it comes to soccer. You know, some of it's critical, some of it's negative, but ultimately I believe that, you know, as you, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm still very, very bullish about the future of soccer in the United States. This incredible culture, this unique culture that we are all a part of, that we have fostered and nurtured, and it has grown into something pretty spectacular, and something that maybe 20 years ago, if you had told me this is what the American soccer culture would be, I'm not sure that you or me or many others that were around back then would have said that it would look exactly like this. And that's a good thing, because it's much more robust and much more passionate and much more influential, and ultimately much bigger than I think many of us thought it would be in this short amount of time.
Yeah, it is remarkable. Alexi Lalas joining us here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. Okay, I want to take you to Clint Dempsey. I was listening to Paul Mariner, and Paul made it pretty clear that when Clint Dempsey came into Major League Soccer, he walked in that locker room, and he didn't walk in it as a scared rookie and a guy that was saying to himself, well, I'm going to have to do my time. He was a guy that came in there to want to play right away. a very unique and different guy. What is the great lesson we can learn from Clint, his pioneering, the differing style of play he had, and his upbringing in the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I actually did this on my podcast, State of the Union. I did a kind of an homage to Clint Dempsey, and I'll give you the Cliff Notes version of it. I mean, really, I think when you look at his legacy, it really is in that he inspired a generation to not be scared to try things. And, you know, the famous quote from Bruce Arena, I won't use it because it's a bit off color, but he tried stuff. And that was what his genius was, in that, you know, he could certainly run through a wall, and he did that both for club and country. But ultimately, I think his genius was his ability to constantly find ways around the wall. I'm not talking about the actual wall, although he certainly hit plenty of free kicks over walls. But I think that he found and saw things that others couldn't see, or others were told, even if they saw it, they weren't allowed to try it. And look, it didn't always go well for Clint Dempsey. Those tricks and those moments didn't always happen, but he always gave us the feeling that the potential for that to happen existed because of his audacity, if you will. And ultimately what it comes down to is a creativity and an imagination and a willingness from certainly others, and you talk about Paul Mariner and different people in his life that encouraged him to do that, but ultimately that comes from within. That comes from a chip on your shoulder, and we know Clint Dempsey's background. He had to fight for everything that he got, but his path is very, very interesting. At times it's unique, although he went the collegiate path, and I know there's a whole other conversation to have about that, but ultimately he got to the top, and he got to the top by fighting and by doing things that ultimately I think he believed was right. And in those moments where maybe others were told either don't do that or you can't do that, he said, I'm going to do that, and I believe that I can do it. And as I said, it didn't always work, but ultimately, when it did, it provided us with magical moments and what makes him arguably one of the greatest American soccer players ever to play the game.
Oh, what a unique player. I mean, you go from the goal in the first minute against Ghana, you go to the goal he scores to avoid relegation. I believe it was against Liverpool. The other thing is, he survived so many managers at Fulham. I mean, this guy was a survivor, played with that chip on his shoulder that I think we want to see out of more American players, don't we?
We do. And he was, I'm not the first to say this, but he is an American original and certainly a badass when it comes to what he was. But keep in mind also that Clint Dempsey was also at times frustrating. He was certainly off the field. He was no friend to the media. He did not suffer fools. He didn't like small talk. It was a horrible interview, and it was by design. He just didn't have time for that side of it, didn't have time for celebrity or any of those types of things. He was very stoic. It would not surprise me in the least if Clint Dempsey just, you know, rides off into the sunset and we don't hear from him. It would be a pity, though, because I do think that if he can find a way to kind of harness and articulate what he did, which is what we talked about, and finds a way to be able to explain that to a future generation, he could be really, really valuable in terms of being that motivator. I don't know what capacity, but and also keep in mind that, you know, our friend Taylor Twellman, I was talking to someone the other day, just because someone wasn't great in terms of the media as a player doesn't mean necessarily that they aren't great, because Taylor was horrible with the media when he was a player. But he has gone on to great things when it comes to it. So who knows? I still don't see Clint Dempsey really going down that path, but I'll be really interested to see where he goes, if he stays involved in soccer, or if, like I said, he just, you know, flies and, you know, goes off into the sunset and goes fishing.
I love the point you just made about him potentially being sort of that mentor teacher that can light the fire under others to look at the game differently like he did. There's a real place for him if he wants that, I believe. U.S.-Brazil, Friday. You're going to be involved with the broadcast. Again, loving this young team. I love that Dave Sarakin's picking these young guys and just absolutely blooding them and giving them opportunity, which we wouldn't have had if we had gone to the World Cup. What jumps out to you about this roster and this game on Friday?
Well, I mean, so, you know, we are in this new age, you know, in that we a lot of asked for change and demanded change. And I do think that this is a moment for change, a seminal type of moment where you can change after the failure that was not qualifying for the World Cup this summer. I have this, I'll call it bathwater theory, in that oftentimes you say, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think there are times, though, when you do throw the baby out with the bathwater and you just start anew. And I think this is one of those times. Now, it doesn't mean that Christian Pulisic isn't going to be involved. And when I look at the quote-unquote experience that, for example, Dave Sarokin has brought in, you're talking about, what, John Brooks? You're talking about a DeAndre Yedlin, and that's basically it. Some other guys that have certainly been there, but I like the fact that we're recognizing that we are going to give ownership to a whole new core and a whole new group that is going to come in, hopefully wrap their arms around it and say, you know what, not under my watch, and recognize the opportunity that they have. And I got to give Dave Sarokin a lot of credit. It's a very strange situation to be in. I mean, over a year as this coach, by the time they probably pick this next coach, and I think he has set up whoever is coming in with, you know, blooding some young players, but really establishing from a philosophical standpoint that, you know what, come Qatar in 22, and let's be honest, also come the Olympics coming up in the next year, which I think is going to be the core of players, we are going to see a completely different face of this team in terms of the individuals that are going to be involved. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a good thing. But it also means that some players that maybe could help going forward, you may say, you know what, you did your time. It didn't end well. We thank you for everything you've done, but we're moving on.
Yeah, it's good insight on your part. And do you expect a coach to be named by January? I mean, we're giving Ernie Stewart some time here. Are you disappointed something hasn't happened quicker? Or is this good methodical thinking here? Because this is obviously a very, very big choice who's going to be the next manager of the U.S.
Yeah, I'm caught in two minds here because I do think that it's gotten to the point where, you know, one of the silver linings, if you will, nothing's good, but let's just look at not making the World Cup. At least we had some time to kind of do some stuff. And by the time this coach gets named, it will be over a year from the time that the debacle happened in 2017. Now, I do recognize that a lot has happened over that time, including a change of leadership at the top from the Federation and a recognition that they want to do things differently and they want to make sure they have to get this right. I get that. Look, I have no inside information, but if I'm looking at this right now, if they knew they had somebody, they would have named him or her. But given the fact that Greg Berhalter has got to be in this mix, it would make sense, given what's going on with Columbus, to not pour gas on that fire. If Columbus is going to Austin, and then you also take Greg Berhalter, maybe Greg said, look, I'd love to do it, but I want to wait till the end of this season. And maybe they hold off until the end of the MLS season and then name someone like Greg Berhalter. Like I said, I have no inside information. That would be fine with me. I'd be fine with Greg Berhalter. I think he'd do a great job. But Ernie Stewart really is the one that has to have the vision, and then he goes out and gets who he feels is going to implement that vision on a training-to-training basis. And it's going to be a long time, and that's the hard part about doing the game on Friday, because Dave Sarokin, I love him, and I think he's really bolstered his resume and really is going to come out looking good, even though he's not going to continue coaching this team. It's difficult to assess this team when we know that somebody is going to come in and be very, and could possibly be very, very different in terms of what they want. But I got to feel that if they have a coach that's picked, I would hope that Ernie Stewart and Dave Sarokin have been in contact with an understanding that this is with an eye to the future, and he or she has had input in this lineup and this roster that's being brought in for Friday and for the game against Mexico.
Well, whoever takes over is going to benefit from the work Dave has done and his staff has done in putting everything in kind of place here, giving people opportunity. And Dave does and will deserve a lot of credit for what he's done. Alexi, thank you so much for coming on tonight. Very much enjoyed the conversation, as always. Saw Def Leppard last night. They tore it up here in Houston. Just wanted to drop that to you as well.
That's beautiful. It warms the cockles of my redheaded heart. All right, beautiful.
Thanks, Alexi, for coming on.
See ya.
All right, that's Alexi Lalas. Great interview there with him, as always.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.